Welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast, where we amplify the stories of regular people practicing anti-racism in their everyday lives. Every single one of us has the ability to create real and meaningful change right where we are. I'm your host, Carrie Sawyer, and I've got the stories to prove it. I can't wait to introduce you to these people, these change leaders, people who saw a need and decided to take action. To me, this is so inspiring, showing the powerful idea of everyday activism. I hope that you take away at least some small inspiration and use it to act and create more good in your world too. Let's get started, y'all. Hello and welcome. My name is Carrie Sawyer and I am the host of the Inclusion First Podcast. I am so excited that you are here today for this conversation. Now, this is going to be a really good one. My friend Neil is amazing. I'm so lucky that I have so many amazing people who say yes when I ask them to come on this podcast, but I was super excited when Neil said yes, and we are going to have a really incredible conversation. So let me introduce you to him. Neil Bloom describes himself as a serial entrepreneur and investor. He is the CEO of Rising Tide Partners, which is a communication firm, and he is the co-founder and managing director of Interlock Capital, a venture investment firm. He is chair emeritus of Startup San Diego, which is how I met him, serving on the board there. Neil graduated with an engineering undergraduate degree from UCSD and went to work on NASA's Space Shuttle program, launching astronauts to the space station. He has since obtained an MBA with an emphasis in entrepreneurship and marketing. Neil has a really amazing podcast that you should definitely go over and check out right after you listen to this episode that is called Tacos and Tech Podcast. If I had to describe Neil in three words from the short time that I've known him, I would say that he is kind, he is incredibly humble, and he is a very, very, very helpful person, which makes him perfectly positioned to do the work that he is doing. Please welcome Neil Bloom to the Inclusion First Podcast. Hi, Neil. Welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me here today.
Thanks so much for having me. Good to be here.
I am super excited for this conversation. Maybe we can start off by just having you introduce yourself to our listeners and tell them a little bit about who you are, what you do in this world.
Yeah, and I wear a lot of hats, so I'll try to be quick. I am an entrepreneur. I run a company called Rising Tide Partners. We do communications work, and we run some tech blogs about tech communities. I also am a managing partner at Interlock Capital. We're an investment firm that brings operators together to invest in other entrepreneurs. And in my spare time, I volunteer with Startup San Diego, which is a group that is near and dear to my heart that you and I are both on the board of. I just rolled off as chairman, so I guess I'm chair emeritus, which feels like, you know, the old chair, as I think is what my official role is. And in that regard, we bring together the startup community to, in a very hopefully accessible way as possible, for people to experience and explore the world of entrepreneurship, whether that means exploring their own ideas or working for an entrepreneur or a startup. So yeah, those are areas that I am passionate about and spend a lot of time in.
Awesome. I love it. Thank you so much. So we're just going to dive right into the questions today. And the first place that I like to start is really around activism. So, Neil, what does it mean to you in 2021 to be an activist? And do you consider yourself to be one?
An activist to me is not just having conviction, but evangelizing conviction. Promoting, supporting, in not just for notoriety, but also for change. And you know, the whole hope of affecting change, I think is the measured outcome in being an activist. And so, you know, I wouldn't claim I'm a capital A activist, maybe a lowercase a activist. So I wouldn't give myself a title in that. I would say that my actions and how I evangelize and promote and support many others, I believe I am being an activist in that regard.
Awesome, Neil. Thank you so much for sharing like what activism looks like to you. And we hear a lot of people kind of talk about this like big activist and like little activist and really thinking about like activism on a spectrum. There's all these different things that we can do. And sometimes we think it has to be like this big grandiose, like in the public spotlight. But these things that we can do in our own sphere of influence are, I would say, not only just as important, maybe even more important, because not everyone is going to be on that grand stage. But that doesn't mean that the work that you're doing, the way that you're thinking about these problems, how you're interrupting what's going on around you and changing the momentum when it comes to inclusion and equity and anti-racism and all of these things, doesn't mean that that doesn't matter just as much. I feel like we are the most powerful in those circles that are closest to us, because they already know us, they trust us, they like us. And so that influence is just that much stronger, and that opportunity to create impact as well.
I think you're right. I think maybe a lot of us take for granted what our actions, you know, say, and what we do can relate to that. And I have a quick little story about that. So I have my own podcast, and during pandemic, you know, we had already recorded like 8 episodes ahead of time. We pushed it out every week. And so when Black Lives Matter happened, we had episodes running and we weren't talking about Black Lives Matter at all. Even though it's a tech podcast, you know, it's necessarily expected that we would talk about this. But I had someone write me and said, hey, you know, I was really surprised. Like you had, actually, I think it was Alex Waters on. And you guys didn't mention at all, like how, you know, he runs an incubator focused on equity and accessibility for a certain region, but we didn't address it. And that made me realize, you know, like context matters a lot. And I think you're right. Like, it's not necessarily about having to say, hey, I am an activist, therefore I have to do things. It's kind of your responsibility in general to the people that you talk to and trust that you should be contextually relevant to the conversation that's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I think that, I mean, you know, we've got our systems, right? And you're like, everything's running smoothly. Woohoo, we're ahead. It doesn't even necessarily like pop in your mind, like, oh, we need to like pivot. And I think that, organizations, especially, were really caught, I mean, you know, caught off guard, but we had never experienced something like this, like in our generation, like at the same time that this pandemic is happening. And so like, what do you do? And when you don't do anything, or when you don't say anything, then people, of course, they fill in what that means. And so there was this great fear for a lot of organizations to, you know, we don't want to say anything wrong, so we're not going to say anything at all. And that in itself sends a message. And so how do you figure out even just what to say? If it's quick, I like to tell people to, like, you know, if you're an organization, especially, what are your values and how does what's happening in the world intersect with your values? Right. And as that company that you want to show up as, what would they do? What would they say? You don't have to have the answers. You don't have to know the exact right thing to do. But I mean, just in the case of everything that happened last summer, like, you know, murder's wrong. That could be your statement. And we, you know, are sending, you know, positive energy to everyone who was impacted by this. Like, that's just like a human to human response. That, I mean, if that gets you in trouble with your stakeholders, you probably need to reassess what your values are, you know? I know it's more complicated than that, but still, you know, how do you tie these kinds of things into your values and who you are, and thinking about the communities that you're serving and what they, you know, what they need to hear from you, especially in moments of crisis. Right? We're not prepared for crisis typically, because we never have such a far reaching crisis where no matter if you were talking about baking cookies, you needed to be mentioning like Black Lives Matter in, or, you know, what's going on contextually. That's just not a space that we're typically used to being in, for sure. Totally. So giving ourselves grace as we figure it out as well.
Yep. Totally agree.
Yeah. So I would love to hear, you know, with these organizations that you're involved with, that you're running, that you founded, like when all of this is happening, like how does that impact what you're saying in your organization to your employees, to the people you're partnering with, to the kinds of organizations and founders that you're supporting? What did that look like? What was that process like for you to navigate figuring this out?
I think, as the leader of organizations, it's you set the tone a bit But you, and for me, I'm a listener. And so what I like to do is set the tone that says, hey, everyone, this happened, obviously. So like acknowledge it, I think step one. If you would like a space to talk about it, I would like to help create that. And that can be public or private within our organization. I'm thinking more of my company, right? Sure. Where we have like internal team meetings or something. And so I think just allowing there be a space where if it wants to be addressed, it can be, and listening. And I think that's really my main goal was that, in that regard. And that was as much as I did in the beginning, to be honest. Like I didn't feel like having a position mattered at the point. I think it was more acknowledging was more important to me than me being looked at as the leader to say, here's what's right or here's what's wrong per se. So that was it in the beginning, to be honest. And that's where I started.
Yeah. And how did that feel for your organization? Like what kind of feedback did you get? Did anyone take you up on the safe space to talk? And, you know, would you, with hindsight being 2020, would you do the same thing or would you do something different? How did it play out for you?
What I was proud of is that the company, well, let's take away from what I was proud of. So the response first, the team appreciated the opportunity to bring it up and talk about it, mm-hmm. right? So just the fact that it was okay to talk about it, I think was a great step one. We then had a conversation and found that we all felt the same way, specifically around Black Lives Matter. Like, holy, like what is happening right now?
Sure.
So first just kind of acknowledging the shock, acknowledging that it's affecting us and that it's maybe distracting from work, right? As well too. Mm-hmm. And once we all felt kind of we're on the same page there was this feeling that we need to acknowledge it as a company. And I was really proud that the employees felt that way and felt that we should say something from a company perspective, because it's very easy to just say, you know, I'm going to have an individualistic view and I'm going to do it on my own personal Instagram or something. But I wanted to hear it from everyone that, hey, this company that represents all of us is going to say something about it and that we're all going to be on the same page about what it is that we say. And I let them drive that. And I thought that was more important than me saying, hey, can someone write a social post that says blank, right?
Sure.
I think that was the feeling was that one, let's talk about it. Good. Now let's represent ourselves, and say that we have, use our voice to say that, you know, here's how we believe as a company too. Look, these all sound like really small, but I honestly, this is what I felt, I wanted to let the team kind of drive that forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I could see why you would maybe think it's small, but I'm going to push back on that because I think these small actions matter because every person on your team got something from that. They got comfort, they got safety, they got an opportunity to like use the voice and the power and the reach of the company to make a difference. And I mean, I've worked for all kinds of different companies. And, you know, sometimes it can be really hard to get your company to even acknowledge that these things in the world are affecting you that, and that you, you know, you're spending your best hours and days and giving all these great things of yourself to this organization. You want it to represent you. And when it doesn't, it's very frustrating and very disheartening. And that in and of itself is even more distracting on top of what's going on. And so being able to have the company as an outlet and a place of safety as well, I think is completely, I mean, it's invaluable. And those people, you know, that took a weight off of them. Some, not all of it, but it took some of the weight off that then they went home and had less weight. And so they impacted those people around them differently than if they wouldn't have. And so I think that's great. And I think small things, especially like this, when you are personally able to align your values to the company, I mean, it just reinforces like why you're there and why the work that you're doing matters. And that goes a long way in, you know, your own happiness and contentment with where you are and what you're doing, with your gifts and talents. So I know I've been super engaged at companies and I would like leaving is never a thought in your mind when you're engaged, even when there are problems going on, you're going to problem solve them versus like when you're like, I'm out of alignment on all these things. Maybe I should leave. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's a completely different situation.
Yeah. It's interesting. I'm curious. Just reflecting back, I felt, and maybe my opinion and the company's opinion were the same, right? But I felt like, if looking back in retrospect, I publicly didn't come out with enough of my own opinion and said, well, my company is doing this thing. That's enough for me to kind of acknowledge, even kind of publicly. I don't know. I'm curious what CEOs and other leaders are feeling and what you've heard around that, of just like, how much does it matter, just as much that publicly the CEO and the company kind of say, come out with an opinion a feeling in that regard?
Yeah, that's really interesting, because they are different entities. And you know, one doesn't necessarily speak for the other, or vice versa. But then they can.
And they can amplify. Like, you can, if the CEO can amplify the company's message or not, but I'm curious.
Yeah, I can think too. One CEO that I know he made public statements, and his company made statements as well. And, you know, he was very emphatic. And then, you know, based on the position that he has in the community, like, people listen. And I know that, you know, I think you're kind of a big deal, Neil. So people listen as well, right? And so that can matter, and it can amplify and echo, and it also makes people think about it and connect into the message in a different way. Like, when it's your company, okay, that's the work stuff. But then Neil is saying this, oh, I knew this about Neil, I didn't know this about Neil, I wonder what he thinks about this. I agree, I just, like, whatever. It's like kind of a totally different type of discourse that goes on in the mind, and allows, again, that hook in personally, which is kind of how we want to get people thinking about this, in my opinion. Because I think, whether you're a leader or an individual, it all starts with you as the person and how you're thinking about it, where you are engaging, how you are taking personal responsibility to, you know, educate yourself or speak up or interrupt, whatever those things are. That starts with you and your own personal comfort, any work that you've done around it, and really just your willingness to jump in where you are. And so everyone is at a different point. And I really like to say that, like, there's no right or wrong place to be, as long as you are, like, in it and, like, making efforts to move forward. You know, I hope that we never have the opportunity to, like, have to do what we did in June of 2020. But there will be other trials and tribulations that come up, and that gives us, like, a model to look back on and be like, okay, how do we do? How did I do? What would I want to do different? How did I show up? And is that who I am now? You know, looking back, and what would I do? And so now we've got this opportunity to do better and do more, regardless of where you jumped in. And I'm a seeker of information, of growth, of expansion. So I'm always trying to do better and do more. I know everyone doesn't always think like that, but in this space of trying to create equity and opportunity for all people, no matter, you know, what you are, where you come from, what you look like, there will always be more to be done, and a better way for us to show up for and with and by each other.
I totally agree. I think it's interesting. I was listening to the kind of the way that you're framing your sentences, and there's a lot of do. And I think, not necessarily just saying, sometimes we think saying means you've done something, but usually not, right? There's a lot that can be done, but not said. Or maybe you don't even need to say the things that you're doing, right? Of reaching out and asking someone of a different, totally different belief to just hear them out and listen and offer help. You don't have to put that on social media, which is kind of, right. I think during Black Lives Matter, I think there was a lot of saying was enough, but what else can be done wasn't thought about. And I know I inwardly looked at myself there, just like, having a position was one thing, doing something felt like the next thing. And I think that's something interesting about activism in itself too, is not just saying, but the doing part as well too. So I'd love to learn more on that side as well. Just like, how do you balance those two?
Yeah. And I feel like our journeys are very personal and very individual, and they can be totally customized. Like, if you are a person who has a voice, who wants to be out there talking, who wants to be a modeler, then do that if that's one of your strengths. If you're a person who wants to be behind the scenes because that's where you're more powerful, that is perfectly okay too. Part of this work is about getting to know, like, who you are and where your comfort lies, but then also where you need to push past and outside of your comfort zone as well. And so words are awesome to a certain point, but if that's all you've got, then it starts to become more what we call like performative allyship, right? Where you're going to say all the right things, but you're not actually going to invest anything. And that investment can be time, it can be money, it can be, you know, emotional labor. It can be a lot of different things, but both the investment and then in some cases, like it's a risk, especially for majority populations, for white America, like it's a risk because depending upon the circles that you're in, talking about inclusion and equity and diversity might not be well received. And that's just, you know, that's just the reality of it, right? And so you socially, you know, with your social capital, your political capital, your financial capital, part of activism is putting some of those things on the line at risk because, you know, I'm at this party and this thing is being said and I could go along with it and maintain status quo with my friends and peers and colleagues, or I could say something that is going to take us in a different direction. I can say something to interrupt. Activism, allyship, anti-racism is not just about talking, but it's about interrupting, interrupting racism. And I mean, and if we're talking about activism, like interrupting any of the isms, sexism, homophobic, xenophobia, all of these things. And it all comes from the same skill set, putting your political, financial, social capital at risk and making that investment of your resources in interrupting and transforming what's going on around you. And even if that's just with a colleague, like, hey, you know what, that's not okay what you said. Or, hey, have you thought about, you know, how that might make whatever group feel? Or have you thought about this other group or this other approach because it actually creates more opportunity for different ideas and more innovation, all these things, right? That's putting, you know, that's an investment and that's also taking that risk.
Mm-hmm. It's really interesting to think about the interrupting piece because it's true. We're all guilty of seeing it and not doing something about it, you know, in that regard, in any of those isms, I'm sure. Maybe not every single one. But at least we've all seen at least one of them.
We've seen several isms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a few I hope I never see. But,
right.
but still, I hope that I have the spine to do something if I do, right? And know enough about myself of how I would react or respond, you know, in that flight or fight moment. Because that's what it's gonna, probably a lot of this is going to come down to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And one of the things about, in this case, this is kind of in the racism field. This is like interpersonal racism, which is what happens when we have the opportunity to interrupt something that's going on socially around us. And sometimes like we miss it. Like there's something that happens, it comes out of left field, we weren't expecting it, and we're like, and it's gone. Yeah. And you're thrown off and you don't know what to do. And so you just let it slide. But if you are someone who is intentional and thinking about this work and trying to do better and learn more, the next time, like it's going to bother you so much that you missed it. The next time you're going to be that much more prepared. Even if you almost miss it or you almost catch it, like eventually you're going to get to the point where you're going to be able to interrupt it. Mm-hmm. And I think another opportunity that we have for interrupting is, you know, is in our systems and structures. When we think about what our teams look like, what our programs look like, you know, the communities that we're serving, who's there, who's not there, who's, you know, whose voices matter, whose don't, and thinking about how do we interrupt these systems that are just exist as like the normal way to do things? When we know at the end of the day that the outcomes that we're getting from that are uneven, are inequitable, are sexist, are racist, are these different things. And, you know, I have a, I wouldn't even say it's a strong stance. It's an honest stance. Like if you look at, you know, like big companies, you're looking at your hiring pool and there's no diversity in it. Like that is a racist outcome. I'm not saying the person who designed it is racist. I'm not saying the company is racist. I'm saying that outcome is racist. That outcome is sexist. That outcome does not support, you know, our LGBTQ plus community, whatever it is. That's just the reality. That's the math of it. Okay. So now that we see that outcome that we don't like, that we know isn't equitable and inclusive, what do we do about it? Do we ignore it? Or do we start to figure out how to change it? And so that's another form of interruption that we can do. And we know all the numbers and all the companies and all the diversity is terrible. And now that we are in this moment of like racial awakening, right? We're all focused, hyper-focused on racism. Like we can use this as a platform for not just racism, but all the other isms as well. And say like definitively, like we know this isn't okay. And it's definitely not okay anymore based on how the world is shifting and changing, and we want better for ourselves. And so we're gonna do something about it. We're gonna figure it out.
Totally. I think it's interesting. My first job out of college was at a giant engineering firm, aerospace, and I couldn't put my finger on it for a bit because I was pretty emotionally unintelligent at the time. But it came to, I realized that there was just surrounded by homogeny and no diversity of thought. We all were kind of, you know, sheltering ourselves around the same kind of people. Low EQ, no offense if any of my past colleagues are listening, but it's true. We were relying more on our brains to just think of like smartness and surrounding ourselves with other smart rocket scientists kind of thing. And because of that, there was no one challenging our ideas, challenging our thought process, challenging and putting ourselves in uncomfortable situations, I think.
Right.
I know you know all the data, like there's so much data around how that's actually could hurt a business a lot by having everyone just thinking the same thing.
Yeah, the group think.
But what it actually hurt me was just, I just felt, I don't know, I just felt cold. And I felt like it wasn't comfortable at all, actually, in the end. Like we all thought we were in our comfort zone because we were just like around the same kind of people. I just got no, like it didn't itch my brain, you know, anymore, scratch it. And so I had to leave. But I actually fell into my next situation. It was I started a company with one of the coworkers from that company, and we had all the exact same skill sets. So we had no complementary skill sets specifically.
Like, who's going to do that part we both hate?
Right. I don't know. Right. And we ultimately had a failure. We had a falling out. We broke apart. We also were roommates, which also was a problem. So we were like living together and working together, which I don't recommend for co-founders unless it's husband wife, because you've already figured out and you're probably already complimentary to each other if you're husband and wife. But it taught me a lot the hard way of how much more you gain from one knowing your strengths and even more your weaknesses and filling that in with someone who fills that in, so that you're like 1 + 1 = 3, not 1 + 1/2 = maybe 1 kind of thing. So that was interesting just from a self-learning in my early 20s kind of thing. And you have to retrain your brain to be like, I excel when everyone around me is different in many ways. Like I learned so much more. Every experience, there's a much greater palette of colors to everything when it's different, when someone challenges you. And it's not easy for that. But now wearing the investor hat, I look for that in teams if they're self-aware of that from themselves, right? Or are they just three engineers who all have the same mindset, you know? So I don't know. That's been kind of my journey around thinking around the talent that you surround yourself with and what you stand to gain from once you realize like diversity is better and is just in general better for you. Now, the next thing we probably should talk about is like the recruitment piece, right? So that, which you started to allude to, but I don't know if you want to pause and just kind of talk through that part first. Co-founders being around each other.
I was just going to plus one all the things you said about, you know, this, the diversity giving you more opportunities to think differently and to explore different things in it. And, you know, we're conditioned as a society not to be wrong and also to avoid conflict. And so I think that's like a big driver of why like people like me, woo, yay. But conflict isn't always a bad thing. Often it's not. And it's necessary when you're working through the different issues. And so creating that space where different ideas can be brought to the table and be surfaced. And that's the key to the, like, you know, you can't just have diversity. You have to have the inclusion as well, because of different mindsets are all sitting at the table, but two of them feel like they can't talk because no one values what they say. That's lost, right? And so that's why you always hear those two together and why it's so important. Diverse teams at first are more difficult because you have to get into that, like, how do we communicate? Like, how do we problem solve together? How do we understand what each other's mean? But then once they get rolling and they work out those kinks, like, the sky is the limit. And that's really what you want in this, you know, innovation culture where we need new approaches and new thoughts and new ways of, you know, working through these problems that are complex and important. And we want to solve them for as many people as possible, not just the ones who look like us. And there's so many examples of homogenous engineering team fails out there in the world, right? So We know what happens when we don't do it, but what happens when we do, and what do we create that is amazing because of that?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think the inclusion part's interesting, and I kind of want to ask you a little bit more about that, specifically because a lot of my inclusion examples I think are going to come off as accessibility more than inclusion.
Sure.
A lot of things we do at Startup San Diego is about accessibility, right? Like, how do we make sure that we're bringing programs to people that don't exclude people?
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder if the does inclusion and accessibility, they're not the same thing. I kind of would ask you to kind of define and make sure I'm using the words in the right way.
Sure. Accessibility can mean a few different things in this context, but like having access, and that's almost like that goes more even to equity, right? Because equity is this opportunity for everyone to like kind of get what they need. And when you're giving access to people now, okay, how do I reach these different communities? I might have to do different things to get to different communities, but I'm going to do that because it's important that they're all here at the table. And so when we think about inclusion, that really is how do you make people feel like they can be engaged, that they're valued, that they're respected, that they're accepted. So when they show up, they're not like, oh, I don't belong here. And I know we've had conversations like, you know, when you're in these rooms with all these different founders or VCs and you look around as a person of color, should I be here? Okay, so that's the optics, but maybe it's the vibe. Is the vibe friendly and open, or is the vibe like, why are you here? Or does someone mistake you, you know, for the server? So how do you create that inclusive vibe to welcome people in? Even if there aren't people who look like them there, you still have another opportunity to make them feel engaged in and like they belong there, or at least they might want to keep trying to see like, okay, well, there wasn't anyone that looked like me, but they were pretty friendly and they seemed helpful. So that's a step, right? You've made an in with them, and you have another opportunity to continue to build that relationship. You know?
Got it. So accessibility and inclusion go together. Accessibility is get them through the door, and inclusion, once they're through the door, make sure that they're a part of what's going on inside the room.
Mm-hmm. And that has to do with like, okay, so maybe our organization doesn't look exactly like you, but maybe we bring in speakers who do look like you. And maybe we also have done some research around like, all right, how do we approach different communities? What kind of problems are founders of color dealing with that majority founders aren't? And we have content for you, right? So it's, you know, what's the programming look like? What does the content look like? What does the outreach look like? Where are these touch points showing up, and how are we adjusting those so that we're reaching who we want, when we want, how we want them? And then, you know, you can see how well it's going, right? Based on the engagement and who's showing up. And the thing is like, okay, if it doesn't work the first time, don't give up. Like, maybe you missed on something. Maybe there's something you didn't see. How can you create this like circle of really iteration, right? This is product design. We can think a bit about it like that. If it didn't hit, what do we do wrong? What are we missing? How can we get some feedback to figure out what we can do to, you know, raise those numbers or raise that engagement or make it more valuable or impactful for people? It's the same way that you would do with anything else. A business problem, you have a new product, it doesn't hit, what do we do wrong? You have a whole toolkit for that. You can apply that same kind of thinking as you are engaging with different communities, because at the end of the day, it's a program problem, it's a business problem. It can be solved in a similar way with a few with a few tweaks and touch points, because this is, you know, these are people, and we're trying to create connection and access.
Totally. And if I put either my engineer or marketer hat on, like, you need to have wired up the thing to measure it, what you're doing too, right? So I think that's super important, that if you didn't measure, if you didn't put sensors in place of some sorts or surveying or something, it's hard to do a feedback loop in that regard as well too. So I think from what you're coming from, like designing, one, kind of working backwards, what the intended goal that we hope to learn from it, and how do we go obtain the data to know did we hit that goal or not, which mm-hmm. I think is super important, but often missed is what I've seen.
Yeah, exactly. And there's this, I talk about this in the context of I'm recruiting for conferences, but if you're trying to create diversity, like, you have to set targets. Like, you can't just say we're going to bring women and we're going to have people of color and that's our goal. Like, you need to be specific, because if you don't, then you're not actually thinking tactically through what you need to do to make that happen. And these are goals, right? You might hit it, you might miss it. That's not the point as much as like, what is our plan to reach these different audiences that we haven't reached before? We just hope that they show up. Well, we're going to get the same. If we cast the same net, we're going to get the same people. They're not just going to magically show up. So if we want to say, hey, you know what? We want half women at the next, you know, VC event. That means that half women means we need to like really double down on our marketing to spaces where women are looking at this content, right? Just as an example. So without those specific targets, you're being super general and you're just not going to get to where you want to go. And there's a fear sometimes to say, we want half women, we want, you know, 30% founders of color, whatever it is, because people don't want to be like, if you talk about race, you're considered racist. Like, that's not what racism is, right? So it's okay. We know we're people of color. So it's okay if people say, we need more Black people to be here. How do we figure that out? And talk about it and set those targets and then figure out how do we get, again, working backwards, just like you said. Because if you don't have a plan and just hope, it doesn't work out. And I feel like we've seen that in so many examples, you know, companies, conferences, whatever it is, like, yes, we want more, but we didn't do anything to actually change our approach to make that happen. So how do you change it?
Yeah, I will give you the one accidental example where it did happen, luckily, is Startup San Diego Startup Week, where we for consistently have had over 40% women as part of the audience. So awesome. Like 3x the norm of a tech conference per se. Mm-hmm. We were, you know, I think for a bit like 40 to 45% women.
Wow.
We didn't have a goal per se to be gender, have gender parity, but I think the organizers, we were very smart in who we attracted to be other organizers. I think we were gender neutral there or gender parity there. And therefore, when we looked back historically, we saw that the organizers of panels of women recruiting other women and the way that they wrote content also attracted women who felt like, wow, this is accessible to someone who wants to be an entrepreneur, mm-hmm. but isn't yet, right? So this entrepreneur, that's not a negative, right, per se, right. Which it often feels. So that was a lot of stuff that we learned a lot about that we had accidental success in that. But that can't be the way that you do other pieces like people of color and stuff like that. Like now that we are aware that we accidentally did that, now we have the opportunity to design it up front and say, let's do this right in that regard.
Yeah. For sure. And I mean, we just like, you gave a great example of the point we were making earlier, this like diversity, having diversity on the team changes the outcomes. Without that diversity, if all the people who were organizing were men, would you have had 50% women? Probably not. But because you had diversity in your team, they're thinking about things in a different way, looking at things in a different way and problem solving differently. And cumulatively, that left you with this really great gender balance in your programming.
Yeah. Yeah. So now that we're aware of it, we can't lose that, right? Because that's something that we're really proud of. And now we need to, and I think that led a lot of the conversation to, wow, like obviously the original organizers had, if they didn't say it, they were focused on, or at least forward leaning on accessibility and inclusion mm-hmm. enough to make sure that the people in the room represented a larger cut of our audience that we wanted.
Right.
So that was great, but you know, you can't take it for granted. That's for sure. So I'm really happy that we now do a lot of measurement and reporting so that we at least can see how are we doing? Because I think if you don't release that publicly also, you know, you can just hide it away and be like, oh, we missed the mark. Maybe that'll be next year's goal. Mm-hmm. But I think this impact report that Startup San Diego put out last year was a great start to say, here's who we are and here's where we were and here's where we're going. So that's kind of something that was kind of cool that came out of the analysis of, well, how did we get 50-50 gender split? Okay. Mm-hmm. Now we know it. Now let's mm-hmm. talk about, you know, what we're lacking as well and where we hope to go with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's another time where you can choose to use your voice or not, but using your voice in this case, like it's amazing for any organization to like be a model, even if you didn't hit your goals, even if you're just thinking about it and struggling through, it's important, I think, for other organizations to see that you're doing that because you can be a trailblazer. People are always watching organizations, individuals, people are watching what you're doing. And there are people who are thinking similar things to you, but aren't quite sure, or maybe think they're alone and crazy. And so they're like holding back and not doing it. But then when you put your voice out there saying, hey, this is what we're doing, here were our hits and here are our misses, like, oh man, that's great. let's see how we could do that too.
Yeah, totally. Do you have another example of like another, I don't know, another organization come at it differently than Startup San Diego did?
There's another group that I work with around conferences. And yeah, like it really was, okay, here's our targets. Here's our like spreadsheet. And how do we work the network? And I think that that is a really interesting way. Like you start with the people that you know, but then also how do you build your community partners? That's what can be a really big thing because, I mean, even thinking about, you know, there's women's groups, women's groups of color, there's all these LGBTQ groups. Like, so how do you find those different diversity groups and plug into them? Because, you know, we're going to have a conference every year or twice a year. So let's build this relationship because we want people who are in our same sphere and, you know, talking about the things, same things we're talking about, but with these interesting intersections, we also want to expose our community with and to. Let's partner and see how we can figure out, you know, when we're thinking about reaching out to, there's all kinds of different like business organizations for all the intersections that you can think of. And so how do you start to build those partnerships, I think, is a really good way to create something that you can repeat the next year because you don't want to have to figure it out from scratch every single time. How can you start to make it easier for yourself and to systematize it? You know, I've had people call me and be like, hey, Carrie, you know, a brown person who can do this. I'm like, I do, but this is not the right way per se to do that. You can't depend on someone else's social capital to like build your organization's diversity and inclusion. You have to figure out like, how do we actually create a system of this? And it's not that hard. There's different things that you can do and building those relationships. And also, I mean, I love what you all did with the organizing, like get some organizers who are diverse because they're going to not just thinking about like the people and what they look like, but they're going to bring different ideas anyways to all parts of it, which is really going to enrich that as well.
So that's something interesting. I don't mean to ask you questions. I know,
no, it's totally fine. Curling did the same thing. He was like, I knew he was going to ask me questions and I'm like, let's do it.
So in let's just take an example where you and I just, we just recently organized some panels for Startup Month. In our own heads, we probably had our own, not necessarily quota, but like, here's who we want to envision seeing on this panel, representative of blank community. Is there a right way to like, you know, book a panel in that regard? Like, should you focus on gender parity? Should you focus on diversity of people of color? Like, what's the right move there when you're thinking about organizing that?
Sure. And I think that it totally depends on what is the organization, who are they trying to represent, who are they trying to reach, and what are their goals and values when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion, right? And so you get to decide what those are and what are most important to you, and then you create the plan. One conference that I used to go to when I was working at Qualcomm was Lesbians Who Tech. And it was an incredible conference. And they did an incredible, intentional, out loud job of creating diversity within that intersection. They're like, we're going to have 30% trans. We're going to have like 50% women of color. We're going to have all these different things. And they like, they created targets and then they went for it. And when you sat on in the audience, you saw so much diversity of all the things. It was incredible. I've never seen anyone do as well as that. But they started with the goals. And where did the goals come from? Their values, who they are, who they wanted to reach, and who they wanted to represent. And all of that was in such alignment. And you felt that so powerfully. And they had a lot of success in creating this really beautiful kaleidoscope of gender identity and, you know, all the different things. And so I really love that. And whenever I think about a model for like, how do you double down on diversity? Like they're the model because they do such an incredible job. And then they talk about it. They're like, here's our stats. So you can just like spit those off to people. You're like, this conference, like they did it. Anyone can do it because they're doing it. This is a super specific niche, Lesbians Who Tech. How do they create so much diversity? Like if they can do it, anyone can do it.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. I mean, it's not necessarily brain science, neuroscience, but it's, you know, represent yourself of who you want to represent, right? Like be your audience in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Like we're here in San Diego. So what does that mean for who we want to represent and who we want to put out front and show and who we want to reach, even who's not there? Like that can be a, you know, we don't have a big showing of this particular audience. That means we're going to actually double down on some of these speakers because they're going to bring people who are interested, who are following them, who are supporting them into your audience, right? So you can be totally strategic, even if You don't currently have an audience with a certain group in your community.
Yeah. And that should not just who you have on panels, therefore it also should backfill who's in your leadership as well too. Which we are going through an exercise right now of the board makeup survey, right? So understanding what the board is made up of, are we representative of the community that we represent, and kind of back and forth. So that kind of is really good thinking to think about that, you know, that survey should hopefully match, or at least we fill it in the future, match who also who our speakers are in panels and therefore who's in attendance of our events.
Yeah. And then it becomes this like easy streamlined thing, right? Like everything is lining up with the next thing. And then it just becomes part of how you do things. And there you go. Boom. Diverse, equitable, inclusive, easy.
Yeah. Easy. We do something at Interlock Capital, which Interlock Capital is a group of operators, the easiest way to say it, people, angel investors who want to invest in other entrepreneurs. Nice. And we, my partner Al, who's a great builder, we built a system for every night at midnight, our website, our public website. So I think it's interlock.capital/transparency. We have a page that every night at midnight goes and looks at both the leadership teams of all the companies we've invested in and the makeup of our investors. So there's 250 of us, depending upon when this goes live. And right now we're just displaying gender. So we actually display gender of both. We're 50% female led of portfolio companies. But we are only 14% female investors in our group. We were higher, and just we've noticed that we've been watching referrals of who's referring other people, and men are referring more men than women are being referred at the pace. And so we've grown. When we first put the dashboard up, we were 100 people, and over I think 6 months now we're now 250. And we're looking at where can we measure to see where are we lacking to where our numbers dropping. So I think that's been interesting for us to just have a dashboard publicly, because I know I'm further, like, you know, just I feel like there's more on the line because it's out there. Sure. Anyone can go and see what our current numbers are.
Yep.
And they're literally updated every night at midnight. It's just a program that just runs. So it's not like, oh, the data is 6 months old. Yeah. No, the most it is 24 hours old. And that actually makes me think differently about what I do every day. Like I really do think like, how is this going to affect those numbers? Because I know there are certain people who are like, I want to invest in diverse founders. And if you are showing me, you know, white male after white male after white male, like I'm just going to slowly not do those deals. Right. And that sits on my mind all the time of just like, are we investing in our community and vice versa? Is our community representative of us as well? So that's just something that we've started this year, and next we'll add ethnicity, and we're kind of designing the survey. I may actually have come to you and have you come look at the survey of what else, what's appropriate, and how do we ask the right things of both sides, right? And how much do we want to present out there of what the makeup is of both sides of our founders and our investment group as well.
Yeah. I mean, that transparency is such, a huge first step, because then the transparency leads to the accountability, and that accountability drives that like thought around like action in this moment. And even like it creates opportunity for strategy too. Like if men are mostly referring men, all right, well, let's have a couple talks and a couple like campaigns why like you're gonna refer a man and a woman, refer one of both, right? And so now we've got this strategic solution to the data that we're seeing. And if every man referred a man and a woman, or, you know, it was 50-50, like if you're going to refer a man, the next time we need to try to refer a woman, that's going to change your numbers, right? Yep. So it gives you an opportunity to problem solve and think about how you can move things along or shift things before they get too far out of whack.
Totally. And I think to out ourselves a little bit, I think we thought at the beginning, oh man, we got to get women to refer more women, but it is not on them to do that. Like it's not necessarily like we shouldn't say, hey, our numbers are low, help us. You know, yes, it's a good chance that women might know other women in their same space, right? Who are peers. But it should not be, the burden shouldn't be on them to help us get our numbers up. And I think I was guilty of that at first, being like, let's figure out a plan of women to refer more women. But you're right. The one for one model is really the way that we should all be attacking it in that regard.
Yeah. And you can apply that same learning for people of color. You know, that's one of the things that the labor of diversity, equity, inclusion often falls to the marginalized groups to solve their own problems. And that comes from like the top down, hey, can you help us figure this out? Well, what if they can? Or what if they're tired? Or what if they don't know the answer, right? Like, we're all great problem solvers. We're all very smart when we care about something. And we can get resources, we can get help. And when you make it everyone's responsibility instead of just a siloed group's responsibility, you get so much farther in anything. You know, when it's the finances people's job to fix the overspending, like, how does that go? Versus everyone. This is something that affects us all, which inclusion and equity and diversity do. So we're all going to take an active role in that.
Totally. Yeah. I'm just sitting here thinking how.
Yeah, I saw your thinking face.
No, it's really true. It's just, you know, but it kind of comes back to our original thinking as well. Like, leadership needs to set that tone a bit, right? You can't just expect that everyone's just going to champion this cause. You know, like, we all got a lot going on. We all focus on our own individual thing, let alone, like, is it my job to change the organization? You know, it's, if leadership isn't taking that role, it's hard to expect anyone else will too.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that goes all right back to your values and who you want to show up as, who you want to be, and how these things align with making you a great company now, but also a great company in the future as well. And when you think about those things, I mean, it's exciting to me to think about those kind of value alignments and how this helps us and how this strengthens us. And there's your message. And you start to, you know, build that in slowly but surely and see again how that then changes the tactics that you take and the things that you consider and the questions that you're pondering as you think about, you know, the trajectory of your company becomes just another line item is what we really want, right? Like, we think about finance and marketing and communication, like, diversity, equity, inclusion is not a silo that sits over here. It is a horizontal, just like all of those things, because it shows up in every part of your business.
That's true. Hmm. This is why you're the thinker on this. This is why you're educating us.
I love the thinking face, Neil. I want to respect your time. This has been so, so great. It went fast. I really appreciate you, you know, having this dialogue with me and asking questions as well as you're thinking about how this fits into your world and, you know, the work that you've already been doing and the questions that you're wrestling with. I think it's great for people to hear that because we're all at different places. And hopefully someone was like, yeah, you know what, we're thinking about that too. And that's something maybe we're going to think a little bit more about. So I appreciate you giving us a little look inside the black boxes of your world.
Absolutely. No, thanks for creating the space for have these kinds of conversations, for sure. I appreciate it.
Awesome. So Neil, if people want to find you and they don't know where's the best place to connect with you and learn more about your work and your voice out there in the world?
I am the most active on Twitter, so at Neil Bloom, NEALBLOOM, and on LinkedIn as well. If you do reach out to me on LinkedIn, just send me a personal note, you know, how and why I can be helpful to you. It's usually helpful. Those are where I'm most active. My platforms that I kind of run and be a part of, I mentioned interlock.capital and freshbrewtech.com is our tech blog where we promote the San Diego tech ecosystem, and startupsd.org, the nonprofit that really tries to convene the startup community. So yeah, that's where you can find me. Oh, and really another great spot to get in touch if you are in the startup world, the startup Slack. Honestly, Slack is one of the best ways to communicate with me over email. You maybe already know this, Carrie. I respond on Slack compared to everywhere else. So startupsd.org/Slack if you want to join it. It's a community of people interested in that startup community. And yeah, I appreciate just reaching out on there.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Neil.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Inclusion First podcast. We are always collecting and answering your most important questions on anti-racism. So if there's something on your mind, head on over to the inclusionfirstproject.org and click on Ask a Question. We'd love for you to give us your like, your share, your follow, and especially your review, wherever you find us. Thank you so much again for listening, and we will talk to you next time.